Hello and welcome to Wealthspire Advisors podcast Beer Markets. This is Bobby Moyer and I'm joined with Sandy Wiggins.
How you doing, Bobby?
Good, Sandy. I think, you know, we had a nice week out there, not in the markets. We'll get to that in a minute, but the weather's starting to turn outside of allergies here in the Richmond area.
It's Friday. We're going to have a good weekend, nice weather over the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's a great time. Markets closed. Again, not a great close to the day, but, you know, so on that, I'm going to open my beer. How about that?
Sounds good. Me too.
So today, Sandy, I'm drinking another beer. This is almost a... I'm almost redoing one, but I'm not. So this is from the Virginia Beer Company. I believe I've had the Freeverse on our podcast before. If not, I should have because I really like it. But this one is a mango Freeverse. And when I saw this, I was shocked because I thought the Freeverse was really good. So I'm excited to try this. I've never had it. When I saw it in the store, I just knew I had to get it and share it with everybody. So this is the group, as I said, is the Virginia Beer Company, I believe out of Williamsburg. It is, you know, as they call it, juicy, silky, and tantalizing. Who wouldn't like that? But here we are. They say, we thought Freeverse couldn't get any better. Well, we were wrong, they say. I'll be the judge of that. But I'm excited to take a sip of this and talk some markets with you. And I think we have an exciting show ahead of us.
Well, that beer better live up to its expectation. I am not trying anything new. I'm going to one of my summertime standbys, and that is a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. Probably everybody listening has had it one time or another, but it's just something I like and enjoy. So let's dig into your quick response on your first taste. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think it was good. I think you could taste a little bit of the mango. They say it's, you know, that hazy IPA blend with some mango puree. I like it. I think it's a good beer. I'm going to have a couple more sips as we talk markets, and we'll get on with our weekend from there.
Sounds good.
All right, so where do we start, Sandy? There's, I think, a couple places we could start. I think first, you know, we could chat about a conversation. We had a great honor last night of moderating a conversation with former Richmond Fed President Jeffrey Lacker. And, you know, I found it to be stimulating. I found it to be, you know, a very good conversation. It amazes me when you have the opportunity to talk to somebody who served, and I think he was 2004 to 2017, he was the Fed president here in Richmond, the history they know about the Federal Reserve and, you know, the different sections of the law and how they go about, I mean, he just rambles things off the top of his head, you know, 1913 and, you know, all these other things and gave us a quick history lesson on, you know, the building downtown and how they used to, you know, process checks
and fly them back and forth across the coast, you know, to clear a check. I mean, he said a whole floor was dedicated to it, and now I think he says 20,000 checks a day maybe are processed.
Where and they had to change the law too, right, where to allow faxes, I think, from a while, but planes would go all over the country overnight.
Flying checks.
Yeah, two different times too, right? They had a clearing somewhere before midnight and then at 3 in the morning again, and I knew some of this, but it was fun to hear him talk about it.
The evolution, the change that's occurred, not only in the mechanics like clearing checks, but just the history, the importance. There's the majestic nature of the Federal Reserve. It was like you said, it was an honor, and I think we left with a confirmation of some of the things that we thought, but there were some things that we were surprised to hear and glad we had that opportunity. So let's talk about some of the things that we weren't surprised about. It was nice to hear some confidence, some confirmation in topics. I'll throw one out there. Mm-hmm. Interest rates are going to stay higher for longer. Of course, he doesn't have anything that isn't in the public domain. He wasn't sharing anything confidential. But his perspective is the economy is strong. Inflation is stubborn.
Sticky and high, right?
And taking those two things together, interest rates may need to stay a little higher. And he even, you know, wouldn't be surprised if rates maybe went up a little bit if we can't get inflation moving in the right direction down to that 2% target.
Yeah, it's always dangerous conversation, you know, because we've had the great honor of hearing him speak and the way we might interpret what he said. So with that disclosure out there, we don't want to put any words in his mouth. We're not quoting him at all word for word. But I think, you know, some of the takeaways that we'll go over, I agree. I think his calmness about rates being, you know, higher for longer, and it's no surprise, right? That, I mean, I think Fed Chairman Powell had a major pivot earlier this week, right? When he was speaking, we have that in our notes to maybe cover some of that. But the fact is that rates are going to be where we are, and rate cuts are on the radar right now, you know, just because we got a little bit of a hot CPI reading earlier. But yeah, as long as inflation is running hot and the economy is running and the labor markets are extremely strong, he was very calm about it, and he was not surprised, and just believes that as long as the economy can withhold it, we should be keeping rates higher if inflation is not coming down. So I found that interesting. And to your point, I also found it interesting that he definitely, my words, not taking a hike off the table at some point later this year if it requires it. And I think every Fed, current Fed chair, former Fed chair, says the right things, and that is be data dependent, right? If the data shows that inflation is reaccelerating, we probably should raise rates. I mean, that's no surprise to anybody. But I think the fact of looking at the landscape out there today of what we know now, and this is ever changing, it's possible that hikes could happen before a cut, which I don't think the markets are prepared for that.
Yeah, that would certainly be an adjustment if that were to take place. And there was a question from the audience about a potential rate decrease or increase as we approach the presidential election. And he wasn't speaking specifically about the current Federal Reserve or the current election, but he did say that the Federal Reserve, my words again, I like your disclaimer there, how we're interpreting what we heard, that the Federal Reserve doesn't pay attention to that on one hand. On the other hand, they are cognizant of the impact that they can have on the economy and on the election. So they have a lot to think about. Certainly, they've got to drive monetary, physical influence, those kinds of things. But they want to do it in a way that they can't be criticized for the timing of a change and the impact that would have on a presidential election. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that was any breaking the glass. I mean, that was common in the marketplace, mm-hmm. right? The Fed wants to be known as being independent the best that they can be, right? And he was quick to clear up Congress tells them what to do and what their mandate is, right? So from that independent standpoint, but when they're making decisions, they want to maintain their independence. And he said that, and almost, he didn't say this, this is me saying, almost to a fault, in that they don't want to make a policy change near the election or the meeting 2 days after the election to act like they were waiting for the election to be over. So they want to throw themselves out of being political, right? And I think that's what we've all believed to be the case. But I didn't take, you know, his comments or any comments on that. If the economy needs it, they will
act.
They'll
do what they have to do, regardless of the political fallout, because that's their job.
That's most important. But if they can remove themselves from any
criticism,
right, they don't. And I firmly believe that's probably true, because if they were perceived to help one side, the incumbent, right, or maybe not, and that party lost, well, that's not going to bode well for them when they come up for re-election either. So they'd be putting a lot of eggs in one basket. And I never believe that the Fed is going to make decisions to help an election go one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in this election year, in all election years, you have to be aware of it, right? And I think the takeaway is maybe the June meeting's live. knowing where the data is now, you're probably not getting anything in June.
As far as a rate cut.
Rate cut or increase, right? But so that then you have what, the September, mid-September meeting, then you have 2 days after the election, and then December. So if you don't get anything in June, the question is, are you pushing that off? I think there's another meeting in between there, July. But are you going to push that off at that point till December? And I think that's the case, is if they can't get one in June or July, don't look for one until December unless something really startling happens to the economy. Then I think they would move.
Yep. Yeah, it was a lot of fun chatting with him for sure.
Yeah, I had a blast. I think there was a lot of good stuff that came out of it. You know, one question that you know, that I was interested in, and this is not to be critical at all, and he wasn't on the, he had nothing to do with this because he wasn't in place, but the question came up about buying mortgage-backed securities. And, you know, when housing prices were going up 20%, why'd they keep doing that? And I think what surprised me the most, not the fact that he said, you know, maybe implied that it was probably not the best decision. I think everybody knows that. But I think all monetary policy decisions are, you know, 2020 in hindsight. So, of course, it didn't end well, and we have a housing issues going on. But I think, you know, him talking through the fact that when you have policy in place from a Federal Reserve, even though it was very, 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 can I put another very in there, accommodative, to make a move less, even if you're going back to normal, is perceived to be tightening. And I think that's true, which, you know, maybe I thought of that intellectually myself before, but the way it was brought up and discussed, I could understand the market. And we also talked about forward guidance, and we talked about how the Fed acts these days. And I think that's part of the problem I personally have with the Fed is they are, for them to make a move like that back to normalization, the market perceives it wrong a lot of times and not the way it should be. And that maybe limits their ability to make the right decision. And I think in that case, that's what happened what would have happened if they would have started quote-unquote tightening, even though they weren't tightening, they were just being very accommodative. So, you know, the Fed was definitely wrong there. I don't know if anybody could argue that they weren't, and we're not arguing that now, but it just shows how hard that job is and how hard it's become over the last decade when you start having to deal with the media, the markets, and everybody looking at you after every single word. And it's a different, you know, phenomenon than it was 30 years ago with the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, and the other thing that I was left with was his strong conviction in the United States, our economy, and our role in the global financial markets. Even with the issues that we might have going on, we're still a very, very solid and a great place to be. We talked about a lot of things last night. I know we've also got some other things that we want to talk about.
Yeah, we talked about, Sandy, one, we talked about it publicly, but then he was generous enough to spend some time with us, you know, a lot of time with us after that. We could just get even more insight. And I don't know if there's anything that I would share from that conversation. But to me, being maybe a geek in this stuff, it was just a fun conversation and just gets a different perspective. I think the last thing that I'll touch on real quick is, you know, one, it was a question that came up from the audience, which is why I think it's interesting, because I think a lot of people think about it in this environment. And that is, you know, one, I will pair these two together, and that is the government deficit that we have, right? I mean, it is scary. We all know, what are we, $34 trillion now maybe in debt from the country. And, you know, the question came up and was discussed about monetizing that. And what I mean by that is the government, in theory, some people, modern monetary theory is this theory that came up. I think it was under, it's gone on for a while, but it was in the 2016 presidential election with one of the Democrats that was up, Bernie Sanders. He talked about it a lot, and it was all around the government could spend as much as they want to do because all they have to do is issue debt and the Fed goes and buys it, right? And that was back 2016. You had other Congress people come out with the new Green Deal that wanted to promote buy, 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 or spend, and we don't have to worry about the deficit. But let's fast forward now to where we sit today. We have an inflation problem, and now the Feds can't do all of that stuff. So I think it's good to come back now and say, these are the reasons why we can't just spend, because the Fed can't always have our back because it's inflationary. If the government was able to just print all the money in the world and the Fed just going to monetize it by buying it and putting it on their balance sheet, well, guess what? That's too many dollars chasing too little goods, which is very inflationary. And that's the issue we're at today. And now we have this problem. People don't like inflation. So, you know, consumers hate inflation. Everybody wants all these good things. So, you know, we talked a little bit about it because it came up last night as a question from the audience. And I think it's a good question. I think it's good to revisit every now and then that these are the reasons why some of those policies that are off the beaten path can't be out there, because we're stuck. And right now, you know, the Fed's kind of in a tough spot and rates are high. And
deficit's high.
Yep. And President Biden wants to, you know, give housing credits and all this other, or first time home buyer money back,
which is inflationary.
Inflationary, right? And cost money. And so it's a hard thing to battle. And, you know, going back and forth with the one cool thing he did say last night is, because I asked about it, is when these policies that Congress enacts are inflationary, how do they react behind closed doors? And his reaction was shocked me. I mean, of all things said, this might have been the biggest shock. And his was, you know, we play with the hand we're dealt. And it wasn't so much about complaining. It was, this is the situation we're in. We have to look at the numbers, but this could translate into higher rates for longer. And that was kind of the theme I took. There was a lot of things that were said last night that say higher for longer, onshoring, right? Bringing jobs here costs more money, inflationary. How does that impact the Fed? Well, we can't go to zero on rates, right? We have to have rates a little bit higher. So great conversation. Takeaway, I guess, was we might be in for higher rates. So if you have a savings account getting 5%, I guess you'll keep getting that maybe for the rest of the year. If you want to buy a house, maybe not the best time. We saw mortgage rates tick back up to over 7% again. Not a good environment for buying a home if you're a first time home buyer. Anything else from last night that you want to comment on?
That it was a great time, and let's move on.
Yeah, perfect. So Sandy, let's go on maybe more negative parts here. So we talked, I think, you know, in our investor insights, and recently we've had 5 straight months of the market going up. It was, you know, a great environment. Things were wonderful, and now where we hit, we've had 5 straight days of down markets, and we're after the bell now on Friday afternoon, and we were negative again. So now 6 straight days that the market was down. You know, going into today, we were off maybe 4.5%. The S&P, last I checked, right at the close, was about down 0.8%. So we're down about 5% year to date now, month to date. And people are starting to feel a little bit negative, and we saw the NASDAQ was down 2% today alone. I think it was down off its all-time high 5%. So now 7% for the NASDAQ. Small cap was actually flat today, but coming in today was down between 8.5% and 9.5%, depending if you're looking at the S&P or the Russell. Mid caps were down 7.5%. So it's been a dicey environment here, especially over the last week. And a lot of this is coming off of what I'll refer to, I guess, is the hot CPI and the Powell pivot, you know. So what are your thoughts?
Well, and then you throw in Iran and Israel and some of that just continues to unsettle the market. But again, I would full circle back to our conversation with Jeff, and what the takeaway was, interest rates are going to be higher for longer, and the hot CPI number that we got is causing that. We know inflation is slow to we made great progress the first 6 months or the last 6 months of last year. These first few months are not nearly as successful in fighting inflation. What does that mean? Higher for longer.
Yeah, and it's interesting how the narrative changes, and the narrative changes with, let's look at NVIDIA, right? NVIDIA was down 10% today. 10%. We've talked about NVIDIA being the darling for all, you know, pretty much all year. and last year, and it's down 10%. I think it was down maybe 6 or 7% coming into today. So now you're looking at 16%, you know, off its recent highs. That's a pretty big move for the third biggest company in the S&P.
But let's not forget, what has it done, you know, over the last year?
Yeah, you're right. It's been crazy, and I think my comment was more how tightly wound this market is.
Yeah.
Supermicro. I don't know if you remember that name. Supermicro was up 225% year to date, or it's been on a run. It was trading at like $300 or $400 a share. Got up to maybe over 1,000. It moved into the S&P earlier this year, a couple weeks ago, I believe, and it was down 22% today. And so you raise your hand. From what I understand, the reason why, they announced that they're going to announce earnings on April 30th, and they didn't increase guidance or support guidance. They basically, you know, didn't. So, again, a company like that has moved so much, if you have the slightest, I mean, this was not even
negative
so much. It just wasn't, you know, and I fear the same for somebody like an NVIDIA now. NVIDIA continues to show that their new chips are doing great, and that might be a little bit different. But I think, I don't want to say the market was priced to perfection, but there were some companies that were going up that as soon as that, I mean, Netflix was down 9 or 10% today, and not off a terrible earnings, maybe not the best, but not terrible. I mean, if you look at a frothy environment of streaming, they're the king of the hill, right? And that's, I don't think you could argue that very much. So, you know, to see Netflix down 10, to see Nvidia down 10 today, these are big companies that have, you know, performed very well over the last several years getting hit. And then regional banks are up 2% today. So a couple ways I think you could look at that. One is the rotation, right? And it's a rotation out of some of the stuff that has semis
done so well over the last 18, 24 months.
Right. And that's not an energy, you know, talk about energy costs. Energy has done fairly well this year, so, or this month to date, relative to the other sectors. So it's an interesting environment. I think, you know, there's two major themes that I would say, I don't want to say have changed, but if you look at the price of oil, pretty much the price of oil has traded between, you know, 70 and 80, 60 and 70, 60 and 80 all year. And then mid-March, early April, you saw obviously the geopolitical stuff you referenced, and oil prices getting back up, and we've been above 80 for, you know, a decent amount of time now. And one of the greatest indicators of a recession is a spike in commodity costs, right? And not to say we had that yet, but if you were to see that, right? But just the elevation of oil prices, I think, is hurting stocks a little bit, helping energy stocks. And then interest rates. We talked about inflation being sticky and the Fed being higher for longer. The 10-year Treasury, you know, was relatively tame, and now, you know, has been above 3.6 for the last couple of weeks. 4.6 for the last couple of weeks. And here we are, market not liking it. Higher oil prices, higher yields, and then, you know, some of the other commodities, we're also seeing a surge. You know, copper continues to surge. Some of these areas of the market, that's could be defined as inflationary as well, some of the input costs.
Yeah, so there's a lot of reasons why. There's a lot of details that you mentioned. We'll talk about more. But let's step back for a moment. It's natural for the market to take a breather. And if we, you know, you were saying earlier before we got on the podcast, you know, the market's up six months, 7 months, 8 months. At some point, it's got to take a breather. We just needed a little bit of a catalyst. Now the question is this a breather? Are we consolidating here and we're going to move back up? Or is it more of a rotation into more defensive stocks being driven by higher interest rates in anticipation of rates higher for longer? The market has to get used to that new environment, which may take us a few weeks for the market to settle down, get comfortable with where things are going to be for the remainder of the year, and then we get some good economic data as we have been, and we're off back off to the races. I mean, that's just one hypothetical trend line.
No, we've been consolidating for about a month, right? I mean, we've been kind of choppy, maybe not going down like we have over the last 6 days, but we've been moving that way. And I think you're right. This is normal. I think, one, we talked about the cycle of the election year, and, you know, we kind of haven't gotten it completely right here earlier this year when cycles have shown the first quarter being choppy. But you do see, even in this environment, you know, mid-April, where the markets, you know, tend to maybe be a little bit choppy and get through some of this. So I think it could be a combination of, you know, the election year and some of the volatility that comes along with that. One, we were likely overbought to a degree. And now we're, you know, really trying to get to that point. And I think that's where you were going is, you know, there's two ways when you get very stretched over moving averages, right? Whatever moving average, a 20-day, the 50-day, when you get so stretched because the market goes up, we talked about five straight months, there's two ways to get that back into normal, right? One is you move sideways in a choppy environment and you allow that moving average to get back up and create, you know, underneath support, or you fall down to that support and you hold on to that support. I guess the third is you blow through the support, and that's the potential alternative is if we don't hold, you know, some of this support here, then we may see more volatility. So I think that's the question where we are right now. Is this just your normal
garden variety
5 to 7% yep. correction, and we're putting in a bottom now, we're in the process, or is this a bear market, right? A 20% drop or something much bigger. But don't forget, generally, most years you see a 10% drop. So if we were to see that, that's also not out of the ordinary. But I think I'm a little bit relieved, to be honest, that we did see the market go down at least 5%. You know, that's somewhat healthy. Yeah.
Yep.
I hate to say healthy when the market's going down. Nobody likes that, right? It's not healthy. It hurts your blood pressure. But, you know, I think it could be good because you can't always go up. Yep. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're certainly talking about what might cause the market to go down, some of the issues with higher for longer. But let's look at some of the information we've gotten on retail sales, for instance. Retail mm-hmm. sales are very, very strong. U.S. production, industrial production, very strong. Confidence at the corporate level, strong. So walk us through some of those data points, Bobby.
Well, I think, Sandy, it's as basic as saying that the consumer is spending and there's some demand for some goods out there, right? I mean, that's this is probably not completely accurate, but you go in the labor market first, right? Because if people have jobs, if they feel like they're going to have a job tomorrow, they have money to spend and they will, you know, stimulate the economy. That's as basic as it is, right? So you look at labor. We have some data on the labor force of, what is it, people 62 or older and leaving the workforce, right? So again,
finally retiring. There was a spike after COVID.
Yep.
People worked longer. Now 62 and over are retiring at a pace that's been consistent with historical norms.
And we don't have the labor to support.
We don't have the backfill of new
right,
younger
new
folks coming in.
Yeah, no, longer or import or immigration, whatever. We don't have that right now, and that's holding up. So the labor market continues to look actually really strong, and as long as you start there, people have a job. Again, what I just said, people feel comfortable that they are going to have a job tomorrow. They're even more comfortable. We know Americans, we love to spend. We're not scared of debt. Some of them go into credit card debt, not good decisions, especially where the interest rates are. But if you have a job, you're going to spend. And that's where I think we're at right now is, you know, you mentioned retail sales, there's demand, you have the CHIPS Act. We didn't talk on, but that's causing maybe commodity prices or this demand for infrastructure, which is causing, you know, again, it's demand from the government, but it's demand from infrastructure projects. So we're continuing to move in the right direction. And I think we haven't had that euphoria from a company stand yet, you know, where people are looking to lay off, you know. So all of that wrapped up, it's positive for the economy.
Well, and if we go back a few years, again, this is simply a ripple effect of what started with the pandemic. Right. You throw a rock in the pond, it's going to ripple out. So supply chain issues created inflation. we had stimulus checks, created demand for less products that were, you know, backed up on production. It's just a ripple effect, and it's going to continue to take time to work through that. And even though we do like the interest rates to be lower, we want to be in the market, we want to see, you know, higher returns with lower interest rates, I do think it is healthy that there is a measured approach towards managing interest rates to fight inflation. Better to do that now than let inflation really grab hold, stick around, and that's a bigger argument, bigger battle to fight later on.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, we'll wrap this up here in a minute, but, you know, that's where the Fed is right now, right? I think their whole goal and what they want to do is cut rates before it's too bad, right? Because that's the fear, is if you cut rates when the data is already showing that it's bad, then it's too late, and then the recession comes. So that's a tight window they're in right now. They can't cut with inflation, at least CPI, ticking back up, even though PCE still looks in check, and the labor market's so strong. So they can't cut here, but they want to cut before the data starts showing. And that's always the problem of why they tend to be late, because they wait for the data, but they can't justify cutting here either. And that's the tough market. And the market's volatile around that because it's meeting to meeting, day to day on the data. So it'll be interesting to see how the year, you know, plays out for sure. With the Fed, with the economy, and where we in the election, and where we end up, but
and the comment about ending the year, there's still very positive expectations from various market analysts on the S&P 500. Certainly ending the year higher than it is today. Nobody knows the future, but again, the backdrop of this is market volatility is going to continue. You mentioned the day to day data points. But we've got a strong economy, and we all should be happy about that.
Yeah, that's a good thing. So I think, Sandy, that's a good conversation. Appreciate you spending some time with me.
Always fun.
Yeah.
Beer's good.
Beer's
Let's
good.
Enjoy the weekend.
Yep, sounds good. Thank you.